First question is, Maharaj, parents do not appreciate my interest in Krishna consciousness.
Parents?
Parents, yes. How not to offend them? And what to do when I have to choose between their desires and something important to the Vaishnavas?
Srila Guru Maharaj, he once gave an example of something, and he said he was thinking about for some time, as he is always engaged in his own internal dialogue. That's why when we met him, say, for example, he had written, compiled, and composed some original slogans for Prapanna Jivanamritam, 1940-41, around that time. And when we met him substantially, 78, 79, and took shelter, 81, he was not merely discussing things from the past, but generating fresh concepts. Premadamadeva Stotram, the Gayatri explanation, but also golden volcano, divine lava, subjective evolution of consciousness, the Shiksha Guru Parampara, many things. So he's constantly gaze in this internal dialogue, considering statements of the scriptures, the great devotees, the past, the acharyas. So this example that he came up with, he said, was, and you have to understand a little something, it's within the context of Vedic culture and marriage and a Vedic system. So he said, and it's a comparison to the position of a sadhaka, or an aspiring servitor, and apparent obligations from the environment or from relatives, and given in this case. Right? That in the Vedic system, the husband, he has some rights of assertion over the wife. She has to reciprocate that. He said, so in this context, so karmic demands. You're only in any situation, any and every situation. We're surrounded by our karma. Right? That's what it is. We're responsible for that, not others. You're responsible for the karmic situation that you find yourself in. Whether it's dealing with parents, husband, beloved, brother, sister, relatives, the officials, the world, whatever it is, we're responsible for the karmic circumstances that we find. We've generated them. But then you have some, I mean, that's just true for everyone. But then you have someone who's in the position of an aspiring servitor. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. After wandering the length and breadth of the universe And tasyeta hetu prayate kovido na labhyate yad brahmatam uparyada. And all varieties of karmic situations. Someone who's very fortunate, Guru Krishna Prasadipai Bhakti Lata Bij, the Bhagyawan Jeev, those who are of great fortune, they get Krishna connection. And Karmani Niruddhahati Kentu Chabhakti Bhajam. And all of this becomes reconfigured in the life of a sincere, aspiring servitor, someone who is now connected to Krishna through his own, becomes as if his own. That Krishna, Sarva Dharmam Parichaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja. His advice, demand, however you want to call it, is exclusive shelter. That we shall take exclusive shelter of Krishna, Masu Jaha, and don't worry about any apparent neglect of an obligation or a so-called obligation or a karmic obligation. Because there is no fault on the behalf, on the part of the devotee. This is all concocted. This whole world is a concoction. As Guru Maharaj says sometimes, a colossal hoax. Janame janame hoy pita mata pai guru krishna tarkamile bhaja hariyai. Birth after birth, you get mother and father and relatives and all these things. That's part of, it's no achievement. It's not an achievement. It's just the outcome of being outwardly directed in the mundane world. But it's very rare to get the connection, Krishna, Guru and Krishna, Krishna through Guru. So, anyway, in Guru Maharaj's example, he's saying, so karma, like the husband, has some right to assert because, as I said, we've generated that. So it's coming for payment. It's demanding payment. He said, but the devotee, the aspiring servitor, is in the position of the wife, but like wife with a paramour. Here, the paramour is Krishna, Krishna conception. So when there is the demands of the husband, in parallel, demands of karmic circumstance, that's being reciprocated as far as possible. But really, internally, the heart is given over to the paramour, the heart is given over to Krishna. Right. Guru Maharaj has developed this concept from what Mahaprabhu's advice was to Rupa and Sanatan. When they met with him secretly and expressed their desires to join with him exclusively, but they still had some obligations in terms of the society to fulfill, Mahaprabhu told them that to return to that situation for some time, knowing that soon it would come to an end, and then they would join him. And he gave one of that, Paravyasini Nara, the paramour example, that in fact, under those circumstances, in anticipation of exclusive connection with Mahaprabhu, they would be even more attentive to their duties, as the wife with the paramour is even more attentive to her wifely duties to not cause alarm for the husband. So it's also mentioned in the Bhagavatam, the famous sloka, Guru Nasashat, Swajano Nasashat, Pita Nasashat, Janani Nasashat, etc. Samupeta Mrityum. Namoche Yak Samupeta Mrityum. That really, from a Vedic standard, it says, if you cannot guarantee your ward, whether it be, you know, child, disciple, etc., if you cannot save them from death, then you're not qualified to be a guru, a parent, a teacher, or any such thing. That's the Vedic standard. Anyone can procreate and produce children and then take the name mother and father. Same, but what is their duty? Is to liberate the child. And conversely, the child, putra, putri, to liberate the parents. That's what this is about. Otherwise, if someone thinks, well, that, you know, that's not very Christian. Right? If you look at Christ's teaching, one of his famous statements, I've come to turn mother against child, child against parents. Saying this is more important than that. Right? Like the Devashish told me about the ad for football in England that said, some people think, you know, football is a matter of life and death, but it's more important than that. So they can have all, people can have intense feelings about that. Right? But what about Krishna consciousness, Krishna conception? I mean, after millions of lifetimes of drowning in the ocean of ignorance, one comes finally and left to the shore of truth. Right? And they have an opportunity, labdva sudurlavam bahu sambhavante, right, to get liberated out of this endless cycle of birth and death. And they say, but my mom and dad don't approve. Your mother and father don't approve you of following the path of becoming a liberated soul. They want me to stay bound in this world by, you know, familial affection. What should I do? Well, the best thing is to allow them, you know, to continue with their particular delusion if they don't show any interest or appreciation for Krishna consciousness, not to disturb them, but not to allow your concern or consideration for them to obstruct your spiritual progress. That is to misunderstand what is a priority. And there's examples when it says Guru Nasashat, Shisha, Guru Nasashat, Pita, etc. of Bali Maharaj had to reject his guru, Shukracharya, because he was not giving him pure advice that was not in his ultimate interest. How can someone advise you about what is beneficial for you if they can't see beyond your bodily identity and relation with them? How can they truly be your well-wisher if they will not acknowledge your spiritual self? Bali Maharaj rejected Shukracharya. Prahlad Maharaj had to reject his father. What is that for mother? Was in Ram Lila. Anyway, for each one, there's some example. So if someone is clever, then they can, without disturbing the sentiments of their parents, make an arrangement to withdraw from that situation and enter a position of exclusive devotion. Our Prayojan Tattvacharya is Raghunath Das Goswami. You can say his parents, they think they want what is best for him. Right? So repeatedly he wants to leave that situation and go to the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. It says, Indra Aishwarya Samastri Apsara Sama. He had wealth like Indra, the king of heaven, and a wife as beautiful as an Apsara. When repeatedly he tried to leave and they brought him back, the mother suggested like chaining him to a pillar, you know, with a long chain so he can go do things, but he would be chained. And his father said, he has wealth like Indra, the king of heaven, a wife more beautiful than an Apsara. If that can't bind him, then what good is, you know, chains or ropes going to do? He said, for someone who's become a madman for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, it's called Shreyas and Prayas. Prayas means what appears to be immediately beneficial. And Shreyas is that which is ultimately beneficial. Right. So the well wishes of a family is short-term benefit. Spiritual consideration is long-term, ultimate. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam. Shreya uttamam. You approach guru with about ultimate concern. So it can be a delicate situation. If they're opposed to the culture of Krishna consciousness, then gradually some separation and distance needs to be achieved. Because it means they do not appreciate Krishna consciousness for what it is, Shreya Uttamam, that which is ultimately beneficial. So, yes.
The next question is from some Russian female devotee. I've got a baby now and many material concerns are there. I've lost any desire to chant mantra and to listen to the classes, although I've tried hard. What's even worse, I started to eat fish and eggs. But in my heart I have clear understanding that I'll get through. And I'm not going to betray Krishna. I just have dead calm now. What
have
should
what?
I? Dead calm.
Dead?
Calm, it means like calm.
C-A-L-M.
C-A-L-M, yes. What should I do?
We always need association. You cannot maintain Krishna consciousness on your own. When I say that Guru is engaged in internal dialogue, you know, he can internally, he's associating with these great acharyas, considering their statements. That is not the norm. these great souls, they're in constant association with their guru, superior Vaishnavas, the upper world. But the principle of association is always there. And I'd say, is that where? Anyway. John Mamool. Krishna Bhakti Janmamul Hoy Saru Sangha. Even in Krishna Prem, still association. So we always benefit from association. In the absence of a good association, we're likely to be overwhelmed by mundane environment, develop bad habits, etc. So really, the solution is to get some association that improves our position and helps keep us afloat. Otherwise, we have a tendency to sink towards the mundane. But always association will help. In the absence of, sometimes someone is in a place where they don't have devotees to associate with, then there's this digital sadhu sangha, like now, on the internet. But we have faith in Guru and Vaishnav and the power of divine grace. So we don't think our position is not based upon our own perceived strength. But rather, we're dependent on the mercy of Guru and Vaishnav. So we try to faithfully associate with them. And that will protect us and help us make progress. Yeah.
What is the nature of this mercy? Like, for me, it's not clear. Is it like sympathy of some person? How can I feel that I have the mercy of Vaishnava?
Well, they're not considering our lack of qualification or disqualification. They're sharing Krishna conception with us. That's their kindness. In other words, kindness, grace, mercy. Otherwise, it would be something we feel we deserve. Once it's something that is deserved, it's in another category. Grace, mercy, kindness. This is something that comes from the other side. That's how we should understand that. That they are mercifully ignoring or oblivious to my lack of qualification and being kind and gracious to me by sharing Krishna conception and giving me opportunities to serve. That's all they seem to be concerned with. Is my spiritual well-being, which by extension includes material well-being. But it's not that we've done something that warrants this in terms of an exchange. It's freely given.
We can hear that fear shouldn't be like motivator for doing things. Fear.
But it's a type of motivation, but it's the lowest. So it also has a place. Like, it's all the time when some devotees brought some prasad from Devapoli, Nisringapoli. But there's a time of the year when the mat sends some paramana to Nisringadeva and it comes back and everyone did. But this was not that time. Just some devotees going around on their own way and they bring something. And they're giving to Gurudev. And he says, he has some reluctance because of various reasons. But he said, anyway, he said, we will take because we're afraid of Nrisingadev. And then he said, but Guru Maharaj, he won't take in this way, like some random person comes to me. And he said, Nrisingadev is afraid of Guru Maharaj. And the devotion of such a devotee. Nrisingadev, we're afraid of Nrisingadev. Nrisingadev is afraid of Guru Maharaj. So fear is also a motive, right? Or for action, but it's the lowest type. Above that is prospect or aspiration. Then comes duty. Hashapriya Prabhu was mentioning this, quoting Guru Maharaj the other night. But ultimately, affection. Because we can't fall into the trap of thinking like, oh, we hear everything should be done with love and devotion and affection and well, and at the same time we hear we don't have any and certainly I don't have any, so I don't do any of these things. So I don't take the name of Krishna, I don't offer any, I don't do anything because I can't do it with love and affection. That's being insincere. Right. The sincere person will say, yes, I don't have, but still I do. Why are you doing? Oh, I'm a hopeless case, a helpless case, but still I've heard from Guru, Sadhu Shastra Guru and Vaishnava that I should do these things. I'm trying. Hopelessly, helplessly. That person will get some mercy, some grace. Because they're not trying for it. They're just saying, I'm going to do these things. Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru, and Vaishnava have advised them. That's enough for me. And whether I'm good at it, poor at it, unsuccessful, I will go on doing these things. Because I've heard on some level, it pleases them. So, in this world, it goes back, Guru Maharaj is sometimes talking about Kant and goodwill. And Guru Maharaj said, in this world, we're so misguided that really there's not possibility of pure goodwill in this world from one person to another. There's what Guru Maharaj sometimes called extended selfishness. And that's back to the parental thing. And the name of being a well-wisher and this, that, and the other, it's extended selfishness. It's about control and imposing some false concept on another person. So the position of the devotee is, at different times it may be any one of these things. Sometimes it might be fear, then we're talking about an aspiring sadhaka. Other times aspiration, a sense of prospect. Other times duty, feeling some duty, some responsibility. But it will culminate in affection. That what began maybe even as somewhat, you know, painful or awkward and uncomfortable can transition ultimately to love and affection, something being done with genuine feeling, genuine sentiments. But that's not a matter of wishful thinking. We go, well, that's what I want. How do we do that? How do I bypass all these other things and go right to the love and affection stage? That's called Prakriti Sahajyaism. You're going to not deserve in this sense, but, you know, just by desire, that lolyam just means how much you want something, like the way someone wants a mundane object. That is not what lolyam means. Like, just, you have all this mundane desire to possess something. It's the opposite of that. Kamanda tamaprem nirmala bhaskar. So a more helpful word in understanding lolyam is hankering. And hankering meaning hunger. Hunger can't be faked. When someone asked Guru Maharaj, Shyamananda Prabhu, he said to Guru Maharaj, how, because Guru Maharaj said, you'll get this through the hunger. He said, how to get that hunger? Guru Maharaj said, associate with the hungry. And sometimes Srila Shrava Prabhu, Vaishnava Maharaj would say, and it was true, Srila Gurudev had a way of describing prasadam. He said, even if we had just eaten a feast and you're like, oh, he could describe prasadam in such a way as like to reawaken your hunger. And you just had a feast. That's what we're talking about. When you said the other day, do they ever relish? Or the verse says, machchita madgata prana bodayantas parasparam katayantas jamam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. When talking about Krishna, they're feasting. The way we think, oh, this tastes good, that tastes good. That's the comparison that's being given. How when you slake, you're feeling very thirsty and you're drinking something, that feeling they're having. When you're tasting something that's extraordinary, they're getting that taste from talking about Krishna. And then it even goes further. Ramanti cha means even, you know, eros. That type of pleasure, this is there, according to Guru Maharaj. So yes, they are. But if you ask them, they'll say, well, not even a drop touched me. I'm so unfortunate. They're always hiding their position because they know the ego of assertion or possession, consumption, is antithetical to devotional culture and is repulsive to Krishna, not attractive or endearing or compelling. It's repulsive to Krishna. Pratishta, one meaning is self-assertion. What is the basis for all of this? That my name and the fame and the circumference of my name and fame will expand, extend. Not that the glories of my guru and the guru varga, guru and Vaishnav will be known. No, I'll be known. So, look at what Rupa Goswami's, the, you know, science of devotion. Sequence. Shraddha, sarusanga, bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti. And Guru Maharaj says, incidentally, a shuddha bhakta Vaishnav will never say or think that they've achieved anartha nivritti. Anartha nivritti, ruchi, some taste, ashakti, spiritual attachment. Now you can't take this away from them. They're relishing and become attached. Bhav, the bhakti lata beads is now flowered, blossomed. Now their devotion has a unique fragrance that Krishna is attracted to. They've attracted the attention of Krishna in a substantial way. Then prem. Then what does it say? Sneho, man, rag, anurag, bhav, mahabhav. Sneho also means affection, but this is after Krishna prem, So it's all real. But as Guru Maharaj said, what is wanted is modest, natural growth, not artificial ripening, premature ripening attempt. Modest, natural growth. This is the ultimate thing. Nothing compares to this. That's why one of the 10 offenses is saying that anything, nothing compares to this. It's not just about the holy name. Because the holy name is Krishna. Nothing compares to Krishna. So we say, well, what about this person or that person? Or I told this guy I would meet him on Friday. And now here I am, you know, involved with all these people, hole's been blasted through the mundane universe and people are escaping to Vaikuntha. But I said I would be there at noon. Where's the sense of obligation? This is reality. And you think, well, there's a lot of, you know, card-carrying members of the unreal world who expect me to do this or that or to behave in this way or that way. How much attention should I give what is unreal as opposed to what is real? Then the only thing you could say is like, do you expect me to believe all these things? Yes. As Guru Maharaj said, some devotees, he surprised them by saying, can I ask you a question? And they're like, oh. And they're like, yes? And the Guru said, what is Krishna consciousness? And there was like silence. And one devotee said, it's what Prabhupada taught us. And that's a pretty good answer, a safe answer. And then someone else said, bhakti. And Guru Maharaj said, Krishna, did he mention anything about Krishna? And then he just stopped it and he said, it is reality. And it's in your interest to become acquainted with this reality. It's not one of many things in the world or something peripheral or an option, an alternative lifestyle. It's reality. So we're trying to acquaint ourselves with reality. And in a world that's constantly vanishing before our very eyes, people are trying to distract us and tell us that, no, that this vanishing world with vanishing people, this is what is important and what is substantial. As I told, there's been 110, according to mundane estimation, I don't want to get into the Vedas, and just let's deal with mundane statistics. There's been 110 billion human beings. 100 million of them, or over 100 million of them, have vanished, are gone. All of them, mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, they're gone, they've vanished. We live in a graveyard. The person says, should I go to a hospice? We're already living in a graveyard. There's 100 billion people buried here in this plane. Like the story of it's a Chekhov story about this guy is interested in this girl from Petersburg. Sounds like a typical Russian story already. She's a singer, he's a this, and you know. She's younger, he's older. She can see there's some interest in him at some party, and she passes a note to him after some conversation. I mean, I'm synopsizing. She gives him a note that says, meet me in a graveyard at midnight. And he goes home and he's thinking, this is stupid. And I'm not a stupid man. She's just playing with me, and you know, I'm not an idiot. That's how he was thinking around 9 o'clock. By around 11, he was thinking, what if she actually went? Which means she ate his brain. He's thinking, what if she actually goes? This is going, moving, 11:15, 11, you know, gets, what do they call it, a hansom, means the carriage, like horse-drawn carriage, tells his driver to take him out to the graveyard. He gets there a little bit before midnight. Midnight comes, it's after midnight, she's nowhere to be found. But while he's there, and that's why Chekhov is a masterful writer, nothing happens, right? A lesser writer would have to make something dramatic. Nothing happens. Like, how is he supposed to be such a great writer? Just told a story, nothing happened. That's not interesting. Except that so he decides to walk through the graveyard. And then you can understand why he's concocted this story. And while he's walking through the graveyard, he's looking at the headstones. And there are so many girls there, born at this time, died at this time. And he starts thinking, young men, young women, they had aspirations. They sought love and affection and all these things. And here they ended up in the graveyard. That's where all of this ends up. As the writer Thomas Gray, his elegy, the boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, all that beauty, all that wealth e'er gave, a way to like the inevitable hour, the paths of glory lead but to the grave. So that's the point. He sees the graveyard and thinks, that's where this all ends up. And that's where it's all ended up for the 100 billion people plus that came before us. So Veda, if you're lucky enough to connect with it, what are you saying? That slogan, tad yam bhakti yoga paribhavita hritsaroja ashe shutekshita pato nanunata pungshang. Ashe shutekshita pato. It's the path of seeing by hearing. That's what it is. We're too influenced by what visual stimuli. So we're told, here, if you want to see really what's going on through hearing, it's like hearing Chekhov's story, there's a little something there. Why is it good or valuable? Because it's dealing with mortality. It's saying you're living in the mortal world. Whatever the rest is, I don't even remember. I don't care to remember. This part is important. We're living in the mortal world, which means you have a brief opportunity, right, to get out of this endless cycle, we're told. When Srila Gurudev joined Gurumars at the Math his mother didn't want him to be in the mat either. And she came with the from their village, some elder, like as a group. Because we had always heard the story of someone at the mat who, when the people tried to take him away, you know, in India, the windows have bars on them. He held onto the bars and they couldn't remove him. Then we found out later, that was Srila Govinda Maharaj. The mom came and the village and everyone, and he's holding, and they're like trying to pull him and take him back. And they asked Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj was diplomatic. He said, you know, if he wants to go, then he can go. But if he wants to stay, you should let him stay. Yeah. But when they tried to forcibly remove him, some elder man in the group, a pundit, said, no, not like that. This is not proper. So there's got to be something from our side, too, to show, to demonstrate that we value Krishna conception. It's not just one of many things that we have some appreciation for. As Guru Maharaj said, it's reality. That's what I like when he told them. Like, what is it? It's reality. Because I think it's what Prabhupada told us. No, I mean, it's bhakti. It's devotion to... He's saying, it's reality. This is the ultimate reality. That's an extraordinary thing to connect with, you know, in your life. It should be given, the maximum attention, if not exclusive attention. Everything else is a distraction. And I'm not exempting myself from this, just trying to reiterate what is the truth. That's how we shall feel. Through the culture of faith. So, let me say. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. The things should be measured by this standard. That's why it's given in a sutra-like form. It's a maxim. What's favorable to the culture of Krishna consciousness, we embrace, we move in the direction of that. What is unfavorable to that or in opposition to that, we move away from it. Anything else?
But Maharaj, two different persons may consider the same thing as from the opposite side. Like one thinks this is favorable, another thinks this is unfavorable.
Yes. So, therefore, in consultation, as Guru Maharaj said, not to be overly confident in your own assessment of things. So we approach those who are senior, more experienced, who have proven to be reliable. Because there are many things to be considered. There's grades, first, second, third, fourth. Someone who is in the second grade, they're looking towards the third. But someone in the third position, they're looking for the more. They're moving away from that. So it's not always the same advice for everyone. Guru Maharaj points out, Arjuna is told, to stand and fight, not to renounce his position. Uddhava, the opposite. He renounces the world. They're both getting advice from Krishna. So it's not that, that's why we talk of these principles, but how they shall be applied. Guru Maharaj also mentioned, there's addition, subtraction, division, multiplication. And if we say, of the four, which one should I use? Well, it depends on the situation. Sometimes it's adding, sometimes it's subtracting, sometimes it's multiplying, sometimes it's dividing. When we say, well, I'm inexperienced, please advise me. Therefore, we approach senior, more experienced, reliable sources. And knowing that what is appropriate for someone may not be appropriate for another person. Guru Maharaj would also quote the maxim, you know, oil your own machine. Don't worry about others, or they were given a different type of advice. Be concerned with your situation. So Krishna is giving one type of advice to Arjuna, another type of advice to Uddhava. Both are tenable.
This was asked in regard to some practical situation. And so devotees trying to apply this principle of self-oblivience and take a lot of service, doing everything they can, and can like be out of emotional balance and like shout at people at each other and maybe something like that. And how to apply this principle in practical?
Because once some devotees were in a situation, they became very excited and they're having arguing and shouting and everything. And they came back. Someone came back and gave a report to Srila Guru Maharaj about it and said, about these particular devotees, said, they're roaring like lions. And Guru Maharaj laughed. He said, it's good to roar like a lion for Mahaprabhu. So, but not to abuse devotees. It's one thing to be passionate about what you're doing, have some intensity, but not to abuse devotees. Sometimes superiors chastise inferiors. That's there. Guru Maharaj also said, when you connect with this, you live in a mat, you have to deal with dal and gall. He said dal because it's the cheapest in India, it's the cheapest foodstuff, so that you're going to be served in the ashram. Now we can, it's like a luxury, but he's, and those that was like the cheapest thing. So dal and gall means abuse by your superiors. And I added to that, when you connect with Krishna consciousness in the beginning, your superior is usually like the lowest person there is your superior. And you have to follow their direction. So this will help dissolve the ego, because it can only be accepted in principle. You say, well, like we can, it's similar in some regard to military. As in military, the rank is based upon how much time someone has been there and different factors. But a lot of it has to do with how much time they've been there. So sometimes someone who's even younger is in a higher rank than someone who's older who joined at a later time. Many things are possible. But if we believe in the campaign, like political campaigns are famous for, they have to bring many people together for a short period of time, and it gets very intense. And there's a lot of shouting and sometimes disagreement about what is the best strategy, how to do everything. But the bottom line is the people believe in the message of the candidate. So they're willing to sacrifice their ego for the greater good. When Guru Maharaj came to the Gaudiya Math, he's such an acute hearer, listener. This is before he joined, he's going to these lectures, and there was some suspicion in India at the time that some people were engaged in religious activities, but really it was like a front for political organizing and agitation. So the government would send spies to sort of, you know, pretend like they were interested and to see if it was really legitimately spiritual or had some political hidden agenda. So this one devotee saw the way that Srila Guru Maharaj was listening to Saraswati Thakur, and he thought, no one listens like that. He must be a spy. So the next night came for the lecture, and Guru Maharaj, and that man said, I'm sorry, you won't be allowed to attend. He's telling Guru Maharaj he can't go to Saraswati Thakur's lecture. Think about it. And Guru Maharaj is insulted, and he goes off for a walk on the bank of the Ganga. And he's thinking, some of these people surrounding Saraswati Thakur are intolerable. And he thought, but he's got what I've need, my heart's inner necessity is personified in him, so I'll tolerate them. So that's a way of adjusting also, that we're dedicated and offering ourselves in service to the lotus feet of Guru and Gauranga. And in pursuit of that, we may have to tolerate many things. Many personalities sometimes clash, this, that, the other thing. Saraswati Thakur's, one of his final advices to his disciples, where he said, love and rupture, you know, rupture means like breaking apart. Love and rupture should have the same end. So that means Krishna, like sadjantoshini, to please those who are Krishna's own. That means Guru and Vaishnav. So, but we, our general mood should be to, as much as we conceive of ourselves as being sincere, we should extend that consideration to others, to God brothers and God sisters. Well, they must think in a similar way. They don't want something, they want the same end, the promotion of Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada also said, wherever there's two intelligent people, there'll be a difference of how to proceed. Because each one of them can think of some way to do something. But we should show some willingness to compromise to that end. And it should be rare that we assert ourselves in an extreme way. Sometimes Guru Maharaj would speak about acharya abhiman. Means that sometimes the guru is chastising the disciples in an extreme way, saying, I know what's right, listen to me, do this. Saraswati Thakur, we know, on the one hand he's saying, people give dandavat, he's going, dashoshmi, I'm your servant. But at other times, he'd be roaring like a lion for Mahaprabhu. But after those episodes, he would say, that is my pralapita bhakya, mad, delirious talk, that I am the guru and I'm and you're in an inferior position and now you must listen to what I say and do what I say. He said, that's not how I'm normally thinking. He called it, he said, I was overwhelmed by delirium. So, if we're appreciating the service attitude and tendency of others, then we should be able to adjust and harmonize ourselves.
And as long as it not involves others and insulting devotees, should one try to maintain the balance within, or should like ignore his own self to perform the service? Because one can think like, I have something inside of me that I can't just ignore. So something like that.
Well, I need to know more specifically what that is.
Well, just practical things. Like, you know that you won't be able to do some work without getting too like disturbed within. Should we try to ignore this
self? We should try to ignore that.
As much as possible.
Yes, as much as possible. But then if we see that I'm unable to, then we can express that and some adjustment can be made. Because if something is seva, like Mahaprabhu says, Amara gyai guru hoya tare desh, Jaridako Tari Kahu Krishna Upadesh. Says, Amar, on my order, become guru, deliver the people of the land, tell them about Krishna. Then he says in the following verse, and don't be afraid that, well, how can I do that? I think I'll be overwhelmed by the current of the world. He's saying, if you're faithful and take shelter of this order of mine, you'll be protected from that. Right? So we have to take some risk to extend Krishna consciousness to others. That we have to do. Because our superiors took the risk and extended Krishna consciousness to us. But it's with this tacit understanding that we should extend it to others. What's been freely given to us should be freely given to others. And if we're sincere about that, then Krishna will give some protection to that devotee. But we can't stay in a stagnant position and think, whatever, you know, I have these parameters of what I can do or can't do. By the grace of Guru and Vaishnav, that can be expanded, extended. We can become empowered to do some particular type of seva that we never thought we could be capable of. So, within the order also comes the grace, the empowerment to fulfill that. Like Srila Prabhupada gives himself as an example, or he is an example, the epitome of that. Saraswati Thakur's order, in a sense, preach Krishna consciousness in the English-speaking countries. He didn't tell him, you should go to school, learn English, do this, make some... This was the order. But implied are so many things. Because he's true to the order of his Guru Maharaj. And time, he becomes an instrument for, super empowered. As Guru Maharaj said, a Shaktivesh avatar. He would say... And he wasn't just being humble. He said, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. Why? Because he was not a Sanskrit scholar. Yet this person who's not a Sanskrit scholar produces, the 60 volumes of the Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamritam, all these other books. because he put himself on the altar of self-sacrifice and allowed himself to be used by Krishna to do so many things. He is not the best mridanga player or a Sanskrit scholar or so many things. That's why it's even more perfect. But where he exceeds all others is in his sincerity to dedicate his life to the order of his guru. That light has begun flashing on that camera. Anyway. Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana. In many different places, Prabhupada mentions that sloka as in reference to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur as like an epiphany, like moment where he realized we're finished, that his purpose in life was to dedicate his life to fulfilling the order of his guru. So we can say, well, we're not that, and we're so far from, yes, that's understood. But that's the standard to move toward. So to whatever degree we can offer ourselves is beneficial. Sometimes Gurudev would say, you know, something is better than nothing. And I thought about that. Because what he says is profound. We've heard that's been said by a million people in a million different ways. But when he said it, I thought, yes, the principle that something is better than nothing reaches its zenith point when connected with Krishna consciousness. Here's the ultimate example of something here is infinitely better than nothing. So that's what we think, as he would say, if I have 5 rupees, I do a 5 rupee business. We hear about the standard of the pure unalloyed devotees and realize we're a million devotional light years away from that, but we start moving in that direction under their guidance and trying to serve them. That's what we do. We don't have faith in ourselves and say, we're unqualified, fallen to the extreme, and say, but I have faith in Guru and Vaishnav. This order has come from them. Let me try to, despite my reservations, lack of qualifications, let me try to fulfill that. That will be good for me. Under all circumstances, the order of Guru is good.
May I add? Yes. And Saraswati Thakur had this order, like sutra-like, everyone quoting it. He told this to many disciples. Srila Prabhupada fulfilled it. Mm-hmm. And do you have some kind of order for your disciples like that that you can meditate on?
Well, it's to serve the Guru Varga. And by that I mean Prabhupada, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, Srila Govinda Maharaj. My advice to my disciples is this. I told what came from Guru Maharaj. He said, how did he say? Convert yourself into a proper medium. They're the Einsteins, and we want to transmit their spiritual conceptions to others, offer ourselves as instruments to expressing their standard of Krishna consciousness. That's my advice. And I try to draw attention to their specific aspects of what they teach. And Gurudev would always say, make yourself a fit receiver. So become a receiver and a transmitter. Receive properly and then transmit properly. That's what's wanted. But there, that's where the pure, strong signal is coming from. Receive it well and transmit it well. That's my advice.